This is episode 35 of the Fifth Estate Podcast, Sheila Heen and the Science and Art of Receiving Feedback. Today's episode of the Fifth Estate is brought to you by our friends at Casper Mattress. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress, and they sell it directly to consumers, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. You know how it is when you try to go and look at a mattress, and immediately there is some guy kind of hovering over you, waiting, you know, telling you to try out this mattress, lie down here, and, you know, it's like you just want to look at it and pick them out and kind of, you know, test them out first on your own before being bugged by somebody who's doing that. And with Casper, that is not an issue because they ship these mattresses right to your house. Okay, so it's very convenient. You can buy one of these mattresses risk-free, and they have them in all different sizes, full, queen, and king. Okay, the greatest thing about this is the Casper mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price, and it really is. The supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. So it's kind of like, you know, with the Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It's not too soft. It's not too firm. It's just right. With over 20,000 reviews and a star rating of 4.8 out of 5, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Get this. Free shipping and returns to U.S. and Canada. So you don't even have to pay for shipping, and this sucker gets delivered right to your door. Also, you can try a Casper mattress for 100 nights, 100, 3 months, risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything, and they even ship it back to them for free. So, if you want to try this out, if you want to get a mattress that is going to save you money and is going to be very convenient and is risk-free, then go on over to casper.com/fifth, F-I-F-T-H, casper.com/fifth. You'll get $50 off any mattress that you buy if you enter that promo code. So go to casper.com/fifth. And it is time for another episode of The Fifth Estate. I am here with my co-host, Mr. Neil Dewing. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm a little bit under the weather, but otherwise, my usual self.
Oh, your usual charming, dour self, right?
That's pretty much, yes.
Yeah. So, Neil, now, before we get started, as we always do when we start these shows, we always tell you, if you like the show, if you like listening, go out, subscribe, leave feedback for us on iTunes. We love all that good stuff.
We do indeed like to solicit your feedback, and we certainly enjoy receiving it and learning from it. But, you know, there may be a way that we could receive your feedback better. Maybe we're not getting the message, you know, when you do send us feedback. So, Jay, I think our guest today may be able to help us out with that.
Yes, we have with us Sheila Heen. She is the author of the book, Thanks for the Feedback. And she's here to talk to us today about receiving feedback. You know, we're all anxious to kind of give feedback, but sometimes we're not very good at receiving it. So she's going to help us kind of understand that. Sheila, thanks for being on the show with us.
I am delighted to be here.
All right. So, give us, you know, before we get started, before we kind of get on the questions, kind of give us your background, how you got into this, you know, what you do. Give us a rundown on your story, and then we'll kind of talk about what it is that you know, the show is about.
Well, gosh, how far back shall we go? So I am from Iowa and Nebraska. I went to college in California. I came to law school at Harvard, and I never quite escaped. So I've been with the Harvard Negotiation Project for 23 years now. And the Harvard Negotiation Project really takes a hard look at how people handle differences in views, et cetera, teaches negotiation and influence skills. And out of that work grew a book we wrote about 16 years ago called Difficult Conversations. How do you have particularly challenging conversations where we may have strong disagreement, emotions run high, there's a lot of uncertainty? And then kind of out of the difficult conversations work came what we're talking about today, which is, well, gosh, what's so hard about being on the receiving end of feedback? And by feedback, we mean not just formal performance reviews, which obviously is included, but also just the offhand, often indirect, unspoken, passive-aggressive advice, tips, reactions that we encounter every day that tell us something about how we're impacting other people in the world.
So the Harvard Negotiation, what was the full name of it?
Yeah, the Harvard Negotiation Project, which
that's
is
the Harvard Negotiation Project. So that sounds like something we desperately need more work in this country these days. But
yes, indeed.
So the book, thanks for the feedback. It's about receiving feedback as opposed to giving. Now, so who is this book really for? Is it for a wide audience, a targeted narrow audience, or?
If you're human and you're in relationships with other people, this book is for you. So it combines personal life and professional life. And, you know, we're speaking partly to leaders and people in organizations, but we're also talking to people who are spouses and children and neighbors, et cetera. Because if you're in a relationship, you're going to get advice, requests, reactions from the people around you.
Hmm. And you mentioned briefly what you mean by feedback. Can you go into a little bit more detail about that? I think there's like direct and indirect feedback.
Yeah. So, you know, in some ways, when people hear the word feedback, our automatic reaction is, you know, how many stars did I get when I got rated as an Uber driver or an employee? What's my performance review rating? But we're also just talking about everybody else's reactions and requests for ways in which they wish you would change how you interact with them, how you work with them, how you live with them. And sometimes those requests are pretty indirect. And sometimes the challenge is figuring out, is this feedback at all? In other words, I didn't get a response to my email. Is that feedback about their reaction to it? Or that this is a complicated issue when I thought it was pretty simple, or not? Did they just, you know, it slipped off their radar screen?
Interesting.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah. So here's a question. I kind of said this at the opening. It's like people are always willing to give feedback. You know, we're always willing to tell somebody what we think or to give advice or something like that. So the question then is, you know, what are some ways that, why is it how the way we receive it actually more important instead of giving it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I mentioned that this work came out of our work in difficult conversations. And here's the sort of backstory on that. So for the last 15 to 20 years, we've been traveling around helping people with their toughest conversations. Leaders in particular in organizations, both corporate and government and nonprofits, et cetera. And when we ask them, so what are the conversations you're struggling with that you want some help with? Feedback shows up on that list 100% of the time. People all over the world are struggling with these feedback conversations in organizations, but also in their lives and marriages and all of that and families. And for the first 10 years, we did what I think everybody does, which is we focused on teaching people how to give feedback more clearly and more skillfully and more often. And that's actually helpful. But pretty soon we noticed that it wasn't actually solving the problem. And eventually it sort of hit us like a, you know, ton of bricks. In any exchange of feedback between a giver and receiver, it's actually the receiver who's in charge. Right? It's the receiver who decides what they're going to let in or what sense or story they're going to tell about what was really going on and whether the feedback was valid and whether and how they're going to choose to change or react to the feedback. So we kind of thought, holy cow, maybe we're coming at this totally backwards. And maybe what we should be trying to figure out is why it's so hard for all of us to take in the, you know, unsolicited advice and suggestions and judgments that we get from the people around us every single day. Why is that so hard for all of us? And maybe receiving feedback is actually a distinct skill, a distinct leadership skill that if you got better at it, you could actually take charge of and accelerate your own learning, and you don't have to wait around for a, you know, that perfect mentor to show up, or for the people who are too busy to actually give you the time to give you useful feedback. You can actually go after it and get it yourself.
Well, and it also seems to me that receiving feedback is a lot more complex than giving it. You can teach certain language skills and that sort of thing in terms of giving feedback and being sensitive or being direct and knowing when to do that. But teaching people to monitor their internal disposition and to be more open to feedback, and there's so many different personality types, there's so many different ways that can go awry.
Yeah, that's a really insightful comment, because you're right. You know, there are a handful of really good, skillful things you can do to give feedback the best way you know how. But at some point, if the receiver isn't receptive, then there's only so far skillfulness can go. On the receiving end, what became interesting to us pretty quickly was the sort of typical kinds of triggered reactions that we all have, and the ways in which we actually dismiss feedback too quickly. And by the way, sitting alongside that, the observation that many of the givers in our lives are not skilled givers. So They didn't take the damn class, and they're offering the feedback in the worst way possible, at the worst time possible, in the most annoying way possible. And we don't even like them to begin with or respect them. And so I actually, as a receiver, have to figure out, how do I see if there's something valuable, even in feedback that feels like it's off base or unfair or poorly delivered?
So yeah, the concept of these triggers, you know, could you talk more about those?
Yeah. Well, actually, let me ask you guys, think about a piece of advice that you've gotten that you have not followed. Because, by the way, getting better at receiving doesn't obligate you to take the feedback or to take the advice. So there are lots of good reasons not to take advice. And I'm just curious if you guys off the top of your heads can think of, you know, three or four.
I can think of a lot of times I didn't take advice from people. Just about every time I was.
Tell us why you didn't take it. Like, what was the reason?
Usually because I would poke holes in what they told me and determine why what they told me wasn't applicable to my situation.
Yeah, like that's maybe good advice for you, but it doesn't apply to me or this particular context or situation. It wouldn't work, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or like for me, it would a lot of times it would be some kind of pride would get in the way of, you know, it was something, well, you know, maybe if you tried this and you think, no, the way I'm doing it is fine. I don't need to do it that way. Yeah.
It's not just fine. It's fabulous.
Yes.
You're just too dumb to realize it. Yeah, those are good reasons. Other reasons that jump to mind?
The person giving me the advice was not someone I cared for and didn't necessarily think they had any right to tell me what to do.
Yeah. You want to name names?
Not at all. Well, when I was a teenager, my parents, of course.
Yeah. Totally.
Now that I'm older, I'm desperate for advice from my parents. So.
And you realize the advice that they gave you, you how stupid you were not to listen to it or to brush it off.
Yeah.
In hindsight, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that they were, gave are exactly the reasons why we very quickly reject feedback. So can you guys hear me, by the way?
I think you cut out after the word comma there. Can you repeat that?
Oh, yeah. That years later, you look back on the advice from your parents and think that they were, infuriatingly, actually right.
Yes, that's true.
Awesome. So what's interesting is that as we started to listen to people's reactions and notice our own reactions to feedback, we found exactly what you guys are naming, which is there are a whole bunch of reactions and triggered reactions that we have. Some of the reasons that you reject feedback are actually good reasons, maybe. But what happens is that we actually decide too fast. So when feedback is incoming, I'm scanning it to figure out what's wrong with it. You know, it doesn't apply to me. It was offered at totally the wrong time. You don't really understand what I do to begin with. I don't even like you. I don't want to be like you, et cetera. Because if I can figure out what's wrong with it, then I can safely set it aside and move on with my life. So we're really incented to figure out what's wrong. And the problem is that there's always going to be something wrong with the feedback we get. And in fact, it could be 90% wrong. But the last 10% might be valuable to us. And so we're just deciding to accept it or reject it too fast before we even understand it. And what we also found is that as human beings, we have three kinds of triggered reactions to feedback. That if you understand those triggers, it's not that you won't be triggered, but that you'll be able to manage those triggers a little more effectively while you figure out whether there's anything valuable there. So the first trigger is what we call truth triggers, and that's exactly what you guys were describing. Is this good advice or bad advice? Does it apply to this context? Would it work? Do they have their facts straight? Do they understand the nuances of the situation and the constraints I was under? You know, what are the benefits of doing it my way already that they don't appreciate? So it's all about sort of testing the quality or veracity of the feedback itself, the advice. Mm-hmm. The second, though, is what we call relationship triggers, which has everything to do with who gave you the feedback. Because all feedback lives in that relationship between giver and receiver, and we often have a bigger reaction to the who than the what. You know, I don't even like them. Yeah. They're my parent. They're my dad. They don't really get me. Things don't work that way anymore, which, you know, they don't understand. And so what's interesting is that relationship triggers are an incredibly common reason to reject feedback. But who gave it to you, it sits sort of independently of whether the advice is good advice. So that you could be getting actually good advice from exactly the person you dislike the most.
Interesting.
It's also why your best friend can tell you things that nobody else can, but it's also why from your spouse or someone very close to you, sometimes you can't only hear it in a different way. Like, I don't even hear my husband as giving me feedback. It just feels like him complaining again.
it sounds like a pretty common experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So relationship triggers are interesting and complicated. The last, but the main thing is to separate the who from the what, and to sort of think about each separately. The third kind of trigger is, we call it an identity trigger, and it's all about the story we tell about who we are and also our particular wiring or sensitivity to feedback. Because what we found in the course of our reading and research was that there's some evidence that individual sensitivity to feedback, meaning how upset do you get and how long does it take you to recover, or how happy are you when you get positive feedback and how long do you sustain? And now we're all on teams and friends and we're trying to give feedback to each other, but we have really different wiring for how we react to feedback. And so sort of taking responsibility for understanding your own particular profile in order to manage your reactions and also to help other people know how to give you feedback so you can hear it, is the third piece of the puzzle.
So personal wiring. So, you know, you've got different sensitivities, you say?
Yeah.
Can you talk more a little bit about that? Like, I mean, that sounds like it's like the infinite human experience there. Like how?
Yes, it is. So, well, I'm curious for you guys, would you say that you are each about yourself? Would you say you are relatively even keel? In other words, you know, people give me feedback, I'll think about it, I kind of bounce back quickly, or even the suggestion of feedback is really upsetting and it takes me a really long time to recover emotionally. Would you say you're more or less sensitive?
I'm definitely less sensitive. I mean, as a writer, I am often asked, you know, things that I'll submit, people have to, you know, they'll edit it, And I am one of the few that wants feedback from my editors to say, okay, try this or try that, as opposed to somebody, you know, I've edited people where they, you know, they kind of get upset that you want to change one little thing, you know. So
yeah.
I'm certainly less sensitive to that than most people, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I would say I am. It depends on what the feedback is directed towards. If it's something that is creative and someone doesn't quite get it, what I'm going for, but I think it's sound, then I'm less apt to receive the feedback well. Say when someone edits a particularly delightful phrase that I have composed, then I might get a little bit upset. But generally, I've always sort of had this desire for feedback, and I've solicited it. And you know, one of the things that has bothered me since I was probably 12 years old was that I would notice that no matter how much effort I put into something, I would usually get the same response of "that's great" or "that's good." And so I started to play a little game of chicken with my grades, and just doing less and less work until I was doing the bare minimum. And I was still getting, you know, "this is great work. You're doing wonderful," you know, even though my grades were slipping. "So you're great." So I started to really doubt feedback from most people early on,
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, so actually, what you guys are describing raises something that I kind of skipped over, but that maybe is worth talking about, which is that we actually use this word feedback, but it actually includes three different kinds of things. And part of the challenge is figuring out which kind you want or need, and which kind you're being offered. And so the first is appreciation, which just says, like, "I see you, I get you, I know how much you did or didn't put into this assignment," right? Mm-hmm. And so what you're describing is, "I put in a huge amount of effort into this assignment." Appreciation has a huge impact on our motivation and whether we feel valued. So it has an ongoing relationship with how much we're willing to put in. If nobody even notices I work here, why try my hardest?
Right.
The second kind is coaching, which is anything designed to help this get better, this piece of writing or this presentation or whatever you're doing. If the person is trying to help you become more knowledgeable, more effective, more efficient, et cetera, more skillful, it counts as coaching. Coaching is kind of a term of art these days in the business world, for like an elicitive way to help someone else learn. And that's included, but we also mean anything designed to help you get better. Advice, you know, role modeling, admonishment, correction, et cetera. And that's kind of the engine for your own learning and growth. The third kind, though, is evaluation. And evaluation rates or ranks you, it judges you against a set of standards or expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So grades are evaluation. You know, "we are or aren't going to publish this" is evaluation. And so the easy way to remember those three, by the way, appreciation, coaching, and evaluation, is the acronym ACE. But what's interesting is that coaching and evaluation in particular get mixed up together. And sometimes people think they're offering you coaching, or writers. Sometimes you edit a person's piece and you send them back your suggestions. You're trying to coach them and say, "hey, I think it would be even clearer if you did it this way." And what they hear is, "this wasn't very good." And you know, we have the biggest reaction to evaluation because we feel judged or told we are or aren't meeting expectations or on track or worthy in our relationships. So some of the problem comes from confusing those three and also not being clear what you feel you need. We actually need all three over time to learn and grow, but you need different things at different times. So partly it's just getting clear on. Sometimes I write a piece and it's like, "I know that this actually stinks right now. I just need you to read it and tell me what you like about it, because I need the encouragement to keep going." So if they come back to me with 12 things I should fix, they mean well, but I'm actually just even more demoralized.
And that sort of leads me into another question is, you know, how can you encourage people to give useful feedback? Because that's a problem that I've run into in the past is when I have the germ of an idea and I'm like, should I devote time and, you know, resources to fleshing this out or should I just, you know, drop it? And you ask somebody, hey, what do you think of this? And they're like, no response or not interested or whatever. So that's sort of. How can we encourage people in our lives to give us useful feedback, whether in the job world or in creative realms?
Well, so part of it is exactly what you are hitting upon, which is ask a more specific question to tell them what you're asking. So just saying, hey, what do you think of this is very vague, or hey, do you have any feedback for me is a very hard question for people to answer usefully. If instead you said, look, I don't know whether this is worth putting more time into, can you just take a look at it and tell me whether you think it's worth pursuing? You're asking for their evaluation of whether the idea is worth the time. Or you could say, I think there's something here, but I'm just feeling a little discouraged because I can't figure out exactly what it is. Can you just tell me what you like about it? Because that helps me keep at it, right? Or allows me to, you're asking for coaching. And that's incredibly, it's kind of a relief to the person on the other end because we often ask for feedback with these very vague phrases. And they're thinking, you know, what do I think of it? Can you be more specific about what are you asking me? Do I think it's done? No, it kind of stinks. Do I think it's got an interesting idea at the heart of it? Yeah, actually I do, right? Et cetera.
Okay. Well, what about this? Are there any occasions when you should ignore feedback?
Oh, yes, definitely. So what's interesting is the triggered reactions we have cause us to kind of reject feedback out of hand before we understand it. So each of the triggers actually, the first is what you're asking about. In terms of truth triggers, the set of skills correlates with sort of the challenge to see what the giver means and to see yourself accurately in terms of blind spots and things that we are doing that we don't even realize we're doing that are impacting other people. So to see what the giver means, people often offer feedback in these very vague phrases like, you know, I just think you need to step up your game or you need to show more leadership or you just need to have more confidence. And that's a totally infuriating, confusing thing. I don't even know what that means. Therefore, I'm rejecting your feedback because it's not helpful to me. Rather than reject it, pausing to say, okay, can you either looking backward in time, tell me, was there a time where you thought I should have done something differently that you would think of as leadership that I didn't do? Or looking forward into the future, if I were to follow your advice, help me understand what I would change. Either one of those questions, so it's engaging the person giving you the feedback. I'm not saying I agree or disagree yet. I just need to first understand what you're talking about, what you're suggesting that I change. Then, okay. At the end of the day, I fully understand it, et cetera. I think it's totally legitimate to say either I don't agree or it's not who I am or, you know, on the list of things, my problems, this is so far down the list. I have so many more bigger, more important problems. And the effort that it would take to change that is just not, you know, the cost benefit isn't there. But maybe I'll work on it next year or maybe I'll work on it never. I think that's totally legit, but you can't make that call until you better understand what they're suggesting. And then you can decide if you agree or disagree.
Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. So we're going to take a break real quick and tell you about our friends at Blue Apron. Let's face it, folks, cooking for a lot of people can be a drag, but it doesn't have to be. And Blue Apron can help you with that. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, even for people that can't cook. So if you're one of those people, you want good meals, you don't want something you're going to stick in a microwave, then Blue Apron is something that can help you out. Here's the best part. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. I've gotten these myself. Basically, it comes in a box. There's these big ice packets. All the food is fresh. They use great ingredients. And the food is really delicious. I've had a couple of the meals myself, and they're great. I'm telling you, and it's very easy to do. You don't have to know how to cook in order to do this. They give you, it comes with an instruction card that has photos and step-by-step instructions on what to do to make a great-tasting meal. Here are some of the upcoming meals that they're going to have, and this sounds really good. They have cashew chicken stir-fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad, and you can get an udon noodle soup with miso and soft-boiled eggs. There are so many different varieties of meals that you can get. It's very easy. If you don't like meat, you can cut out meat. If you don't like fish, you can cut out fish. It's up to you. You can even get vegetarian meals. So it's completely up to you. All right. So how do you take advantage of this? I'll tell you what. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/fifth. That's F-I-F-T-H, blueapron.com/fifth. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/fifth. All right, and we're back. Okay, so let's talk for a little bit about feedback in the era of, you know, the internet and social media, because if there's any place that people are willing, again, I'm talking to give feedback, is social media. It's very easy, very quick. There's, you know, you're, and it's also, I think, and you see if you agree with me, there's a freedom to doing it because it's, you know, you're on the internet. You're not actually talking to a person. So it's very easy to sit there and give your view on somebody else's stuff or to give them feedback without having to actually look them in the eye when you're doing it. So let's talk a little bit about that. So just what I was talking about, the negativity. Why are people so negative online? What is that about?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think you're hitting it on the head, which is, you know, there's often very little relationship between us. And so I can, based on my own triggered reaction to what you said or what you were promoting, I've got a whole story about who you are. And I'm not risking anything in terms of my relationship with this person by letting them have it. And so often I'm sort of importing attributions based on whoever they remind me of or these kinds of people. And this is what I really want to say to them. And you said, because we're not talking to people. And that was exactly right, which is, of course, we are talking to people, but it's easy to forget. It's like we're shouting into the void when we're not paying attention to the fact that there's a real person on the other end of this who put themselves out there by writing an article or whatever. And, you know, I don't know how you guys feel, but sometimes when I write a piece, it's like I'm afraid to look at the comments. Because some of them are going to be totally valuable and valid and important for me to hear and learn from. Like, in what ways did I feel, was I misunderstood, or maybe I wasn't as clear, or I could have given better advice. But then a percentage of them are also just completely off topic. And they're people who have pain in their life that somehow I've touched upon. And they're sort of shouting back because maybe they don't feel heard, or they feel hurt or upset by what I've written completely unintentionally.
Yeah. There's the internet adage of never read the comments. I know exactly what you're talking about because, you know, for instance, I used to write a liquor and cocktail review column where I'd highlight a particular cocktail recipe, write it up, and boom.
What could be controversial about that?
Well, let me tell you, because the website published it on a Sunday, and so somebody in the comments section was scolding the website for publishing something about liquor and alcohol on a Sunday when the reader should be at church or might want to read more uplifting content. And I'm like, of all the things to get upset about, Yeah. But you know, there were other times when like professional bartenders would be like, you could never sling 100 of these a night because it's too much involvement and, you know, craft cocktails nonsense. And I'm like, well, it's not for you then, you know, but yeah. People, everybody has something to say. Everybody has their own, you know, they want to put their own spin on what you've done. And my problem was always, I would wade into the comments and I would comment back. And if they gave me a non sequitur, I'd give them a non sequitur. So I was not very good at receiving taunts on Twitter. I sort of immediately got down into the gutter with them.
But, yeah. Well, and they're not thinking about you being an actual real person, right?
Which led me to not think of them as real people either.
Yeah, exactly. You're also noting that most commentary online is either appreciation, right? Like, thank goodness somebody's finally saying this. That's the positive comments.
Yeah.
Or it's judgment and evaluation. Like, I can't believe you're the kind of person who would publish this on Sunday. Or, you know, you're telling me I should be able to make these craft cocktails. I feel judged as a, you know, professional bartender, and I'm going to tell you why that's not true. Why I'm still a good bartender. Yeah. And you should know better, right? And so most online feedback, quote unquote, meaning both comments and also ratings, like 5-star ratings. How many stars do you give this fill in the blank book, dental office, etc.? And so it's almost all judgment and evaluation, which doesn't help us actually get better, whether it's as a writer or a dentist or a cocktail maker.
So how can we encourage these strangers on the internet to give us useful feedback or positive feedback, both in ratings, comments, and social media, just on Twitter or Facebook?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, sometimes, depending on the context, you can actually ask for something specific. They may or may not actually follow your request. But for instance, I was talking to the folks over at Apple last year, and they were saying, oh, we have an app where leaders can tap team members and get feedback. And it's really great. And I said, well, of course you have an app, obviously. Tell me, how is it working? And they said, well, it works pretty well, but we're not sure people are getting what they want out of it. And I said, well, what question does the app ask that the team member responds to? And the question was, how am I doing? Which is an evaluation question. So if I'm a team leader and I tap a bunch of people and say, hey, how am I doing? And I get back 3 stars, this doesn't tell me anything about what the problem is or what I should change. And so my suggestion to them, I don't know if they implement it, was you're just asking the wrong question. They should be asking, you know, what do you particularly appreciate about the way I'm running this project, if anything? And number two, do you have any suggestions? Or what's one thing that if I changed it, it would make a difference to you? I'm not promising I will, but asking what's one thing that you think I might change, or what's one thing I'm doing or failing to do, which, you know, is getting in the way, is very clearly asking for coaching and asking for something specific that will be more useful. So I think in social media, if you can, and if depending on the context, I think you can say, I'm interested in hearing from people who have a suggestion for how to improve this conversation or whatever. Depends on what the context is and whether that's appropriate.
Okay, well, what about, here's a question as well. So, you know, the online world moves very fast.
Yeah.
And things are changing, not day to day, it's hour to hour, sometimes minute to minute. So, how should processing feedback differ as a result of that? And how, since everybody is, you know, we're living in a world now where everybody is very busy and there's always something going on. So the first question is, how do we process it? How is it any different? And secondly, how do we solicit feedback from people that are so busy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll answer the second one first, because it's a little easier, because that what's one thing question is a question that can be answered very quickly, and people will have things off the top of their head. If you're not sure what you could be working on, I'll tell you, everybody in your life has a short list of things that they wish you would change, like that make their job harder to do or that make living with you difficult. They're just not telling you.
Well, my wife is telling me lots of those things.
But... Yeah, exactly. So what's funny is that the people in our lives walk around wishing that we would be different. They have a list that they secretly pass around amongst family and friends and coworkers. But they don't tell us. And so just instead of asking, do you have any feedback for me, which feels like, oh, I should have prepared and give you some sort of official answer. If you just ask, hey, what's one thing that if I change it would make a difference? That's actually a very quick question that they can often answer. You'll be amazed how fast they have an answer, by the way. Like, well, you didn't even have to think about that, did you? Sometimes they'll say, you know, that's a good question. Let me think about it and let me get back to you. But it's clear, I'm not asking for a lot. I'm not asking for a big commitment of time necessarily. And then you can ask several people and just mix it up over time and listen for themes. Sometimes we think that the person we're supposed to get feedback from is the person immediately above us in some way, like a supervisor or boss. But actually, it's the people we're working side by side with every day that often, you know, have thoughts about how they wish you would do it differently. You asked about, like, the speed of social media and things changing and how to decide whether to respond or not. And I think that comes down to purpose. Like, what's my purpose in responding? If my purpose is to sort of stick up for myself or to sock it to them or because they hurt my feelings or that shouldn't stand, or I want to change their mind, well, you can kind of reflect on how likely is that to happen? Like, is this worth engaging or not? Because if I engage it, it probably isn't going to stop there. They're going to feel that they now have to defend themselves. And is there a purpose to drawing this out or not? Sometimes I think there is, and often I think there isn't. I don't know what you guys think.
I think it's contextual, you know, so it depends on, again, it depends on all those factors, relationships and whether this actually is gonna, you know, improve things, you know, so.
And whether people, you know, what you're talking about also means that a lot of this feedback is very public, like other people.
That's an aspect of it too, is that when you are having this sort of feedback session on social media, everyone can see it, and there's a performance element to it. You don't want to.
There's a performance element. Yeah, keep going.
Well, you don't want to be the one to lose the encounter, you know.
Right. And so the stakes are always higher when feedback has an audience, whether that's in a meeting, right? Because there are other people present. In a traditional setting or social media where the world, quote unquote, is listening and watching and reading. And I think it's easy to get sucked into a sort of adversarial one-upsmanship that can quickly become who's got the better zinger or who can put the other person down more, as you were saying, sort of getting in the gutter with them, as opposed to, can I win by being clear what's worth engaging and what's not? It's tempting sometimes to just write, like, I'm sorry that your life is so sad that you entertain yourself by attacking people.
It's very tempting, and I have done that.
It's very tempting, right? But, you know, if you did feel you should respond saying something like, that wasn't my intention, or that wasn't what I was trying to say. I'm sorry if it sounded that way, or whatever. You're sort of being the bigger person, but you're having some empathy and sympathy and remembering that the person on the other side of that comment is also a human being. So not sort of reciprocating the same mistake that's going to cause it to escalate.
Fascinating. That's some great tips. Well, for our listeners, we've been talking to Sheila Heen, who's the co-author of Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. And we've definitely enjoyed this conversation with you, Sheila. Where can people learn more about you and your work?
So Triad Consulting is the firm that does this kind of work, both difficult conversations and negotiation and feedback work. And we're at www.triadconsultinggroup.com. So that's T-R-I-A-D, consultinggroup.com.
Excellent, excellent.
Excellent.
And definitely recommend picking up. Thanks for the feedback. Just even if you're not in a professional setting, it's very interesting on a human psychology level, I think.
Yeah, so. The examples are from, you know, families and marriages and leadership, et cetera. And we tried to also give it a sense of humor and because you have to be able to laugh at yourself to see yourself having these reactions, right? And it's to have the insight that we could all do it better.
It's the only way to get through it.
Exactly.
So we do have one more piece of business before we wrap things up. And this is our one gotcha question that we spring on our guests. We don't tell you what we're going to ask you ahead of time. So it's the only ambush that we have for you, Jay.
This is like the most nerve-wracking part of this whole interview. I'm a culture idiot, and we're about to have the opportunity to judge me for not knowing what you're asking.
Don't worry. We won't think any less of you. Just no matter how you answer, but just know
only
that
a little less, only a little less. That
just
would be
know fine. This is a question that Jay and I vehemently disagree on, and so there is a right and wrong answer from our perspective. However, again, no consequences. So Jay, take it away.
Yeah. So you can hear James Bond music playing in the background. And so the question is, and this has come up, actor Tom Hardy has said he's interested in playing James Bond. And would Tom Hardy make a good James Bond?
Is Googling who is Tom Hardy.
Oh, no.
Because, as I said, I'm like a pop culture idiot. However, and by the way, the top search is who is Tom Hardy. Clearly, I'm the only one who is trying to figure it out. But, of course, I've seen Inception, right?
Yes.
And Band of Brothers. So now I know who he is. I just didn't recognize his name. He'd be fabulous.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
that is the right answer, Sheila. That is the correct answer.
I happen to think that Tom Hardy does better in his roles where he's playing backwoods hillbilly gangsters or Russian KGB thugs than when he's playing suave, you know, international super spies.
But like he did in Inception. So
Is a fair that is a fair concern for him.
But that just shows his range as an actor. That doesn't mean that he couldn't do the role. I mean,
well, it's an interesting. This is the flip side of actually a conversation we were having last night over dinner, which was the opposite about Tom Hanks. Like, has he ever played a bad guy? He always plays the good guy. And you're suggesting that Tom Hardy has the opposite, like he's better as the bad guy, not the good guy, which is interesting.
But is James Bond really totally a good guy? He's kind of more like almost like an anti-hero in a sense.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, he can play James Bond, you know, a little more like Die Hard, right? Like the good guy who breaks the rules, who...
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can see that argument. Okay.
All right. Point
to you, Jay. Point to you.
All right. Well, Sheila, thanks again so much for being on. We really appreciate it. And
thank you for having me. It was really a fun conversation.
Enjoyed it very much.
Pleasure. We enjoyed it. And everybody, that is it for this episode of The Fifth Estate. And for Neil Dewing, I'm Jay Caruso, and we will see you next time.